inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. This is our live edition of the show. Walker Wildman here with you. You can subscribe to the podcast over at afr.net, afr.net. And we do have a guest this segment. We're going to jump to him here just shortly. But before I do that, I want to mention our Operation Christmas Child Project. Our Operation Christmas Child Project National Collection Week is the week ending November 25th. But between now and then, they are collecting shoeboxes. So we're partnering with Operation Christmas Child. The official National Collection Week is November 18 through 25, but they're, of course, compiling the boxes now in order to collect them on the week of the 18th through the 25th. So National Collection Week is coming up here pretty soon in just a couple weeks. And if you want more information on our partnership with Samaritan's Purse, you can simply visit samaritanspurse.org/OCC. samaritanspurse.org/OCC. Bobby, do we have Mr. Jaregi with us?
All right.
All right. Philip Jaregi is our senior counsel. Hey, Philip, you there?
Hey, little technical issues, but we're here.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I can see you now, and we got your audio loud and clear. Philip Jaregi is our senior counsel over at AFA Action. And he's been working on our judicial research project for the last 2 years. And now President Trump has been elected. He's president-elect. So we have a friendly administration incoming. So we brought Philip on just for a few minutes to talk about some of the latest ongoings. Well, Philip, tell us a little bit where we are in this process. We've been doing this research for 2 years, but now, you know, the rubber's starting to hit the road. And there's a lot of news breaking on these appointments.
Big time. And Walker, just in terms of big picture perspective, this is the first time in anyone listening's lifetime that we've had this opportunity with conservatives having the White House, the House, the Senate, but then also the court. Keep in mind, we haven't had the court really until the last 2 years. And I would say we don't have the court in the sense of knowing they're always going to rule the way that we want, but they're no longer a captive tool of the left. So this is an incredible opportunity we have over the next 2 years to make massive progress. And Walker, I think it starts right now with getting good people who understand what it is to appoint constitutional judges into this administration in the key positions that we and our allies and your listeners will be working with. Because if you have the wrong gatekeepers that don't understand what it takes, then you're really... It's an uphill fight, right? But yeah. Now's the time to get great people in there. And I think we're on our way, but we need to focus on that because that's going to be important in the 2 years to come.
Yeah, that's right. And we'll talk later in the show. I'll talk about nominations and who President Trump has nominated thus far for his cabinet and other positions. But Philip, let's talk about two offices, right? There's the Office of White House Counsel and there's the Office of Legal Policy at the DOJ. But first, let's talk about White House counsel. President Trump made a pick yesterday evening on his White House counsel position, but there's even other positions that we haven't been decided on to our knowledge in White House counsel that play a big role in nominations.
Absolutely. So there's the White House counsel, which is Bill McGinley, but then the top position under the White House counsel, he has, as people might imagine, several deputies, about three or four deputies. And one of those deputy White House counsels, they'll probably organize it so that you have a nominations unit. That's up to the president and the White House counsel. But there should be a deputy over nominations. That's a key position to have a good person in there, again, who understands, hopefully they're an ally, Walker, but as long as they understand what it takes to find a good constitutionalist judge and they're following that standard, then great, we can work with that and supply the evidence for different prospects. But that's a key position. But then in addition, they have attorneys and staff working with them at the White House Counsel's Office. And then, as you mentioned, also over at the Department of Justice, there's an office called Office of Legal Policy. That's simply the office there that works on judicial nominations. And so key positions there, a chief or a principal deputy associate attorney general, and then under that, other staffers, again, who will be working on nominations.
Philip, I know you have another obligation, and so we'll only leave you on for another minute or two. But before I let you go, talk about the kind of people and the kind of philosophies that we desire be in these positions in order to get the best of the best nominations.
Absolutely. So, you know, as you know, Walker, we're looking for people who understands what the constitutional standard for a judge is, and that's people who will never legislate from the bench, but will simply decide cases under the laws and not rewrite laws. But then in addition to that, so anybody can give a speech, right, and say, yay, I agree with that. But what we're looking for and what we've spent thousands of hours at AFA doing is researching the background of folks to see, is this something they came to in the last 6 months, or do they have a record of courage over the last 6 years, 16 years, 20 years that give us the greatest amount of confidence? Because that's what we're really looking for. I mean, we've missed it a lot in the past, and so we're trying to minimize the risk that we miss it again. And one of the ways you do that is by looking for people who have the strongest record and a record of courage too, right? Because it's one thing to say it, it's something else to stand for it when it's difficult when you're a judge.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, Philip, we're going to keep tracking this. We're going to have you on over the next few months to talk about this as positions are filled and even lower court vacancies are beginning to be filled by the Trump administration incoming. So thanks so much, Philip.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, Walker.
All right. Appreciate that. That's Philip Jaragi with AFA Action. He's our senior counsel over there. He's also president of Judicial Action Group, and he's working on all of our research on nominations for the federal judiciary. Jumping into some of these nominations, we have Marco Rubio is the Secretary of State pick for President Trump, President-elect Trump. The EPA director selection is Lee Zeldin. He's a congressman from New York. The UN ambassador is Elise Stefanik, from also a congresswoman from New York. Homeland Security secretary pick is Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota. The ambassador to Israel selection is our good friend Mike Huckabee. Very good pick there. And Governor Huckabee, I know him personally. The CIA director pick is John Ratcliffe, former congressman, and he was also director of national intelligence in the first Trump administration. Also, Pete Hegseth, this was a pick that came out last night. Pete Hegseth is a military veteran. I believe he received several awards, several commander-in-chief presidential awards, and served at least two tours overseas in combat. So military veteran there in Pete Hegseth. Also, he graduated from two Ivy League schools, which is very impressive. Susie Wiles is the chief of staff selection. Deputy chief of staff for policy is Stephen Miller. Border czar, you got to love this. President Trump is completely trolling Kamala Harris. Border czar is Tom Homan. Top-notch pick there in Tom Homan. National Security Advisor, Congressman Mike Waltz. Let's see, White House Counsel, as Philip said, is Bill McKinley. And, God, there's so many. Middle East Envoy, Stephen Witkoff. Department of Government Efficiency, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. That was announced last night. So a lot of good picks, honestly. I mean, there's not – I haven't seen any – that are just utterly disappointing. All right, I haven't seen any selections to cabinet or government from President Trump that are just, you know, at face value disappointing. All right, some could be. I have my opinion about all of them. In particular, Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, and I'm not throwing shade on Kristi Noem, but that caught me off guard. I didn't know that Kristi Noem had experience in the Department of Homeland Security or in law enforcement or in that arena. And look, it doesn't mean that you have to, because, you know, one of the problems with Washington is you keep picking the same people to run things and they mess things up and they don't know what they're doing. and they're bought and paid for by special interests. So there is something refreshing and something wise about picking people who haven't held these positions before and in some regards haven't worked in these agencies before. But what's going to make this critically important is that President Trump, is that these leaders of these agencies and these cabinet positions have policy wonks below them that know the ins and outs, that know the rules of the game with these agencies. That's going to be critically important. Like, I'm just thinking about the Department of Defense with Pete Hegseth. I mean, I like Pete Hegseth, but he hasn't worked in the Pentagon. He is a military veteran, so he has extensive military experience, and he does know how the military works, which is a good thing, but he's going to have people beside him, and I'm not saying he will. He's going to have people beside him and below him that know how the Pentagon works, that know how the Defense Department works, and know kind of the ins and the outs, right, of this massive agency, the largest in government, the Pentagon, largest agency budget-wise and personnel-wise in the federal government. So interesting developments. We're still tracking them, but we got to have good people all throughout the Trump administration. And look, this we'll talk more about this in the last segment, but anybody thinking that President Trump's going to smooth sail in there, Democrats are going to get on board with President Trump's agenda, the bureaucracy is going to be fully submissive to President Trump, there's going to be no resistance. Who are we kidding? All right. So let's don't get stuck in this glamour period of President Trump's victory and how great it is, and he's has the wind at his back. All right, those things are true, but folks, the special interest and the money that is at play in this second Trump administration, folks, is billions. Trillions, technically trillions, but billions of money is at play. And there is a litany of special interest groups, major corporations, major military industrial complex contractors that are on the ground in D.C. They're heavily invested in D.C. They are heavily invested in lobbying practices. They are heavily invested in various lawmakers, including senators, and we'll talk about that some. But to think that President Trump and his team are just going to roll into Washington, D.C., and Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are just going to start firing everybody left and right, and that this is going to be a big grand party is being completely ignorant and ignoring of the fact that this is a major fight for the future of our nation, and people's jobs and livelihoods are at stake. And that's not to draw sympathy per se, but I'm just letting you know that this fight is going to be everything but easy. All right, it's going to be anything but easy, and we don't need to be surprised when the resistance begins. And the resistance will begin. I've got clips of it now. The Democrats are regrouping, all right? The Democrats are in disarray. There's no doubt about that. But the reality is that the Democrats will not remain in disarray. That's a fact. The Democrats will regroup. They will come back with their own crafty strategies, and they will do anything and everything that they can to block President Trump's agenda. Now, I'm not saying they will succeed, but I'm just telling you the resistance will be there. The resistance is already there. In Washington, D.C. So get ready. We have basically a two-year window of opportunity with the trifecta of the House, the Senate, and the White House, and the Supreme Court, as Philip Draghi mentioned. So 2 years is the window. Of course, 4 years in a dream scenario, but 2 years is the window of opportunity to fill the seats, pass the legislation, appoint the judges, enact a foreign policy, etc., etc. We'll be back in a few.
I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. What are gates? They are defensive tools used to keep stuff out, to keep an advancing force at bay. Too often, the enemy is successful in putting Christians on defense, when the facts are the Lord established his church as an aggressive, offensive, territory-taking body. The Lord never meant for us to sit on the sidelines of life or to cower in the corner as a result of the wickedness in our culture. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. The light of the world cannot be contained. The Lord is building his church, and the mamby-pamby gates of hell shall not prevail against us.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
As Christians, how can we even begin to impact others when we live in a culture where truth is relative? It all starts with God's Word. Join us for Activate Summit 2025 at Cadence Bank Conference Center in Tupelo, Mississippi, June 12th through the 14th, 2025. The theme is Biblical Bedrock, building on the authority of Scripture, and it's designed to help you acknowledge the Bible's authority and submit to the clear teaching of Scripture. Hear from Frank Turek.
Evolution describes what does behave, not what ought to behave, right? It doesn't give you oughts, it just gives you what does happen.
Todd Herman.
God always uses evil for good. He is very intentional, and he intentionally chose you to live through times such as these.
And more. The main sessions are for ages 13 and up, while Activate Kids is a separate track for ages 6 through 12. Register for Activate Summit 2025 by visiting activate.afa.net/summit. Enter code EARLYBIRD20 at checkout for 20% off tickets before January 1st.
This is Franklin Graham, and I've got an idea for Christmas, and that is to fill a shoebox for a child somewhere in the third world. These children live in poverty, and what I'm asking you to do is just take a shoebox and fill it with items for a child. Put toys, school supplies, and then we give these boxes out, and we do this in Jesus' name. And put your picture in there. Put your address in there. Maybe the kids can write you back, but we need you to be a part of it. God bless you. Thank you so very much.
Visit SamaritansPurse.org/OCC to get involved. Send joy to a child in need with Operation Christmas Child. Simply pack a shoebox with fun toys, school supplies, and hygiene items. Then bring it to a drop-off location during National Collection Week, November 18th through the 25th. You can also build a shoebox online. And the best part is the good news of Jesus Christ is shared alongside your gift. And each child is given the opportunity to participate in a life-changing discipleship program. Visit SamaritansPurse.org/OCC to learn more.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Every day.
Welcome back to The Core. Second segment underway. That was Every Hour by David Leonard and Josh Baldwin there. It's Worship Wednesday. We usually come back into the break, out of the break rather, with a worship song on each Wednesday's edition of the program. Well, moving on to another topic, and then in the last segment, we'll jump back in to some of these presidential nominations and appointments and give you the latest news out of D.C. on that. But John Richardson is with us now. He's founder of Operation World Without Cancer, and he's here to talk about what it means to make America healthy again. Hey, John, welcome to The Core.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's exciting times that we're in. It's almost surreal. I've been fighting this battle along with my dad for the last 60 years. My dad started in the 1970s about making America healthy again. He knew the answer to cancer back then. And now we're at least a little bit more free. We're in this transition period right now. We're at least a little more free to talk about it without fear of retribution because of what happened last Tuesday. So it really is an amazing time to be alive. And I think all of America is going to benefit from this combination of RFK Jr. and Donald Trump.
Yeah, this is a unique alliance and a historic alliance. Because, look, it's no secret that evangelical Christians don't necessarily agree with RFK Jr. on a lot of issues, right? But the issues that we do agree with him about are actually his specialty issues. And what I'm talking about is the entire pharmaceutical industry, the healthcare industry, the junk that we're consuming in our bodies. I mean, RFK Jr. is like a king on this stuff in the right way. And we agree with them on this stuff. So there's a lot of commonality in beliefs when it comes to how we view a lot of the health problems in our society today. So this is a very welcomed coalition and really an aspect of the Republican Party that they haven't even broached. I mean, they haven't even taken this on as a platform issue, and they should have. So give us an overview of this America, Make America Healthy Again agenda.
Well, I absolutely will. And what you said is absolutely true, because one of the biggest things I had as someone involved in the freedom of choice in the health industry, choosing treatments that are healthy for you. One of the biggest things I had, differences I had with President Trump was this vaccine issue, you know, Operation Warp Speed. And there's all sorts of people apologizing for what he did. But the truth is, someone put it very succinctly for me recently. A good friend of mine, a doctor, said, you would not go to a real estate developer to get advice about your health. Why are we going to Donald Trump, a real estate developer, a very good real estate developer, a very freedom-oriented person, but we would not go to him for our health? And so that really put it in perspective for me. But the combination of RFK and Trump is on that side of it. You're right. There's still some things missing. But I look at this new team as all 5,000 of the amazing people. Many of them I've met, and many of them I lock arms with. But the MAHA missions basically we call it seven things. And so number one thing is the immediate release of censored clinical studies that show favorable results for natural, metabolic, organic, non-patentable treatments for cancer. They're out there. They've been studied. They're hidden. They're top secret. And we're going to immediately get those released. And the immediate banning of direct-to-consumer. We're one of only two countries that allow direct-to-consumer advertising of these big pharma drugs that are designed just to be profitable. So we're going to immediately ban that. So you don't have to sit through sponsored by Pfizer when you're trying to watch a football game anymore. We are going to have a comprehensive plan to overhaul big insurance to include both allopathic and natural medical coverage. It's ridiculous that you go to insurance and you can only get covered for these approved chemotherapy, radiation, surgery when it comes to cancer. Only approved things if you decide to go to an acupuncturist, or you decide to go to a naturopath or a chiropractor. Many of these things in the past have not been covered by insurance. That's going to be overhauled. That's going to happen. We're also going to have a compilation of vaccine injury data, including turbo cancers, we're going to gather that data from the public and medical professionals without penalty to analyze and find answers to help the vaccine injured. So this is a huge thing. They already have this data. And so that's going to be, you know, the kind of the fifth level, the platform of making America healthy again. And then we're going to prohibit financial incentives to medical professionals from big pharma and big med companies. Who wants to go to their doctor and know, if I choose this path, the doctor's going to make $8,000. If I choose this path and get healthy, the doctor's going to make less. That system is broken, and we're going to change that. And then we're going to remove all governmental security protection for people who are complicit in the COVID vaccine scandal, aka Dr. Anthony Fauci. No more being free from being sued for doing criminal acts. We're going to stop that. So that's kind of like, that is basically, there's a whole bunch more we could talk about, but that's kind of our platform of what's going to happen. And it's not just me saying it. It's actively happening. You actively see the people they're bringing in that are going to make this happen. And it's, like I said, it's an exciting time. I wasn't sure I'd ever see this in my lifetime. And only God, and I mean that sincerely, only God was able to make this happen, because I woke up Tuesday morning thinking, you know, does God want us to suffer some more so that the more people wake up, or is God going to give us the opportunity? And God gave us the opportunity for all of us now to step up and do the things that he wants us to do after giving us this amazing gift he gave us, allowing this to happen.
Yeah, I've described this as a reprieve. And the question is, to your point, are we going to maximize this reprieve, this opportunity, and do righteous, do noble things, or are we going to squander it and turn around in 2 or 4 years and say, boy, we sure did miss that opportunity. And I sure hope it's the initial one of seizing the opportunity. All of this is interesting, and I could go so many different directions, because I've had multiple guests on to talk about the pharmaceutical industry, the health insurance industry, how all of it's so broken and messed up. And I experience it, every month here. We have 140 employees, so we have to handle HSAs and health insurance and negotiations. But on the vaccine injured, this is a scandal among scandals. Do you believe that RFK Jr. and whoever he puts over HHS, the vigor is there to go after this issue? Because I understand the political implications is it's going to lead back to Operation Warp Speed, which happened under Trump. So I don't know how politically they go about this, but it has to be investigated, because the damage that has been done to people and is still being done to people's bodies under Operation Warp Speed is criminal.
Well, that is absolutely true. And I that was my difference with President Trump. However, he never made it mandatory. There was a recently with Blue Shield Blue Cross, one of the employees they fired because they didn't want to be injected with baby fetuses and whatever else is in these horrible vaccines. They won $11 or $12 million suit. And that, I think that's just the beginning of it. But that's because they force them to either choose their job or get a vaccine. Now, one of the main things that kind of protects President Trump is that no matter, he made it available. I follow Trump. I never felt like he made it clear that he was never going to force anybody to do that.
Yeah.
Many of the liberal Democrats made it say that, yeah, you should be fired. You should lose your right to do this. You should lose your right. Military, you must be forced to do it. President Trump never forced anybody to do it. He made it available in a way that, and I'm not apologizing for him. He made it a way available that conservative, liberal, rich, poor could choose to get it. And that allowed us to, you know, quote unquote, open up the society again, where they really want us locked in our houses and controlled.
Yeah.
So that's the difference. And, you know, guys like Anthony Fauci knew and ahead of time what this would do. Yeah. Trump was naive. Again, asking a real estate developer to give us medical advice about a vaccine was a huge mistake.
Yeah.
And I think that he's basically said he's giving, and I know this firsthand, I'm telling you, I know it. He's basically given carte blanche to RFK Jr., who's been fighting this for 30 years, and his team, Callie Means, Cassie Means, Tulsi Gabbard. These people are for medical freedom and for holding these vaccine pushers accountable, especially the people that made it mandatory and forced it on people.
Yeah, if I'm President Trump and they pursue this, which they should, right? This has to be done. There's a lot of wish list items for a second Trump term, but this is so egregious that it has to be pursued. But look, President Trump, to your point, I mean, if I were him, my position would be, look, I trusted the experts. The experts were wrong. They were very wrong. They only made positive data available to me, and I sponsored something. I backed something that I didn't have all the available information on. And so that's part of the corruption in D.C. I think he can come out of this on the right side if he enables RFK Jr. and others to pursue this the right way. I think he could actually come out on top of this issue. But speaking more broadly about, let's talk about food, right? The ultra-processed food. Talk about that a little bit, the links between that and cancers, and what can be done about that.
Yeah, it's basically, if we had a whole day to talk about it, basically big tobacco, when it started becoming demonized, they started buying up big food. And so we started seeing the same chemicals that made nicotine and tobacco, made people go back and use it over, made it addictive and poisonous. They used the same techniques with food. So all the processed food that we're feeding our children, including cereals. In Canada, Cheerios has, or Fruit Loops has, 3 ingredients. In the United States, it has 22 ingredients. And if you look at those ingredients, half of them are poisonous, literally, and half of them are addictive. So we're allowing in the United States these tobacco companies to own these big food companies, and then they make the food pyramid. So it's all kind of tied in. That is primarily what RFK Jr. and his team is going after. He said to me on stage with about 10,000 people there here in Arizona, he said, "I'm going to bring back the standards of foods within 2 years to equal of Europe and Canada and everywhere else, to where our food is not poisonous." So these processed foods that have cancer-causing ingredients in them, that are snack foods that our kids are fed, have caused, 33% of the kids have diabetes. Half of our children have obesity. Half of them have immune deficiency or immune suppression injuries. They have asthma. And we're the most injected, now that we're moving off of food back to vaccines, because it's kind of a combination. Not only is the food poisonous, but the vaccines will, the mandates for vaccines will be erased. So states like California, or my brand new grandson who just turned a month old, is looking forward to having 72 vaccines before he's 5 years old.
Oh my gosh.
If my daughter wants to put him into to school, yes, and so she can continue her career, it's horrible. And that same thing has been going on with food. So yes, they are equally committed to making, if you get a carrot juice, that the ingredient will be carrots, not carrot juice and 97 other ingredients to keep it fresh. If we can just do that, when we just do that with our foods and bring it back to European standards. And he said he was going to wipe out metabolic chronic disease within 4 years. As the founder and chief visionary officer of Operation World Without Cancer, I've known my whole life that a natural food, God's gift of food, according to Genesis 1:29, where he says, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, and you shall have them for food."
Yes.
That's over our office on the mirror. That is what, if we get back to, God has given us the answers to all these diseases. And RFK Jr. has said to me and to many people, he's putting it out there to everywhere he possibly can.
Amen.
That he's going to wipe out chronic disease within 4 years.
Hey, thanks, John. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. God bless. Appreciate it.
All right. John Richardson, Operation World Without Cancer. Excellent guest there on the Make America Healthy Again agenda.
The cell phone is the new transistor radio. Just like your grandfather may have carried his radio wherever he went, you carry your phone with you all the time. Which means you can listen to American Family Radio anytime you want with the AFR app. You'll find live talk programming, 24-hour Christian music, and access to podcasts of all your favorite AFR shows. Just go to the App Store and download the AFR app for free. Your grandfather would be proud.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. We have the video up live right now over at stream.afa.net, stream.afa.net. If you haven't downloaded the AFA Stream app, it's available on Apple, Android, and Roku, the AFA Stream app. So you can download it on those various devices, on those platforms, and watch the program at any point. When we're live, you can watch the program and watch past episodes of the show. I mentioned Operation Christmas Child. There's so many things I could get to that I don't need to forget about. SamaritansPurse.org/OCC, SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. National Collection Week is the 18th through the 25th of November, so under a week out from that National Collection Week beginning. And shoeboxes will be collected all around the country at more than 4,700 drop-off locations. So if your church is already involved in this, just don't forget. This is just a reminder to pack your shoebox. I want to mention this. This is an opportunity that I didn't think we were going to have. But we're going to Israel in February of 2025. And this is a tour that was supposed to have taken place earlier this year, but in October of 23, the can you believe it's been that long, by the way? October of 2023, the war between Israel and Hamas broke out, and that delayed our March of 24 trip that we were supposed to take earlier this year. And so in February of 2025, upcoming February, we're going to take that trip finally, thankfully. And with President Trump coming into the White House, the likelihood of some type of peace over there is pretty likely, not guaranteed, but pretty likely, because President Trump obviously has communicated on multiple occasions that he doesn't have a toleration for war and death. He just doesn't want to have war and death, whether it's in Ukraine or Israel. He wants peace. So we're going in February of 2025, but the reason I bring this up is that we do have, because some people have backed out and said they don't want to go, which I understand, we do have some openings. So I know some of you, I've heard from some of you where you've said, hey, when are y'all going to Israel again? I want to go with you guys. And you understand the risk and you understand, you know, the full situation there, but many of you have said, I still want to go. I want to go back to Israel. It's on my bucket list. February of 2025 is when we're going to go, and we have about 10 slots open. So wildmangroup.com, or you can call our headquarters and ask for Cindy Roberts. But wildmangroup.com is the URL. You can register there right now. We have about 10 slots, so those could fill up in a couple of days. No spots guaranteed, but wildmangroup.com. You can click on the Holy Land Tour. February 18th through the 26th, I believe, are the dates, and you can register there right now for February of this upcoming year, our trip to the Holy Land. And as we say, even when Israel's not at war, Israel, yes, there's risk. This is my assessment of the people who say, isn't there a war going on right now over there? How can you go over there during a war, et cetera, et cetera? The answer to that question is, when you're traveling overseas, there's always risk, right? I mean, traveling to New York City, there's risk. So there's always risk involved with traveling. There's risk involved with not traveling. But Israel is, relatively speaking, Israel is a safe country. And the reason I can say that is Israel The last thing Israel wants to happen on its watch is to have an American tourist injured on their soil. Okay. The last thing Israel wants to have happen is an American citizen tourist injured on Israeli soil. So Israeli has very advanced security. Their airlines, including El Al, are the most secure airlines in the world. That's my answer to people who are concerned about their safety and security in Israel. And look, if you have any reservation, you don't need to go. Okay. If you have any concern, uncomfortableness with going to Israel anytime soon, then you don't need to sign up. Okay. But we are going in February of 2025. And of course, our tour agency, they're going to make sure we go to safe places. They're going to make sure that all the risks are considered with our trip. So wildmangroup.com, you can go to the URL there, and we have about 10 spots available for February of 2025 if you're interested. Jumping back to breaking news out of Washington, D.C., President Trump has visited the Oval Office, has met with President Biden. President Biden stated that he will ensure President Trump receives a smooth transition, that he will accommodate President Trump at any circumstance that comes up. And President Trump also visited Capitol Hill to meet with congressmen and various other stakeholders. On this Senate Majority Leader race, it appears that John Thune was elected the Senate Majority Leader just several hours ago. And we had been lobbying for Senator Rick Scott out of Florida for the last week or so. And I just want to thank everyone. Listen to this, folks. We had over 23,000 activists, 23,000 AFR listeners, 23,000 AFA supporters that emailed and called their senators in support of Rick Scott. And so while Senator Thune won the election for Senate Majority Leader, which was not our preferred pick, that's no secret, I want to encourage you that your efforts were not in vain. We went into the weekend, this past weekend, we went into the weekend with two or three senators publicly supporting Rick Scott. Three senators publicly supporting Rick Scott for Majority Leader. Folks, we came out of the weekend on Monday with seven senators supporting Rick Scott publicly, and we went into today's vote with 12 senators, Republican senators, supporting Rick Scott for Senate Majority Leader. So your efforts were not in vain. We woke up and got the attention of a lot of Senate offices in Washington, D.C. We flooded their offices with support for Rick Scott. And so thank you, thank you, thank you to the 23,500 was the last number I saw earlier this morning, people that supported Rick Scott for Senate Majority Leader. Nonetheless, Senator John Thune won that election this morning within the GOP conference. And we're going to put out a statement on this later this afternoon or tomorrow morning. But Senator John Thune is going to have to come along to get along with the Trump agenda. And that includes permitting recess appointments. And I know he's spoken to this briefly, but Senator John Thune and his office and the entire GOP conference are going to have to be fully on board with permitting recess appointments. And here's why I bring this up. Looking at Article 2, Section 2, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution, it allows a president to make recess appointments when the U.S. Senate is in recess. When they are not in session, it permits the president to make what is called a recess appointment. But in order for that to happen, number one, let me give you the benefits of a recess appointment. The benefits of a recess appointment is it bypasses the entire hogwash and slow rolling that is the U.S. Senate, okay? And all due respect to the U.S. Senate, they are a slow, slow, slow moving chamber of Congress. And these confirmations take weeks and weeks and months and months. And put it this way, if the Senate Republican majority doesn't allow President Trump to make recess appointments when the Senate is not in when the Senate is in recess, then it will take 2 years or more for President Trump to fill all vacancies. Understand that. This is why it is so important. But nonetheless, the recess appointment, if the Senate will simply go on recess, even if it's for a couple days or a week, that will permit President Trump to make hundreds of recess appointments when they are not in session, okay? And those positions that are filled, I believe they can stay in place for until the end of this Congress. So 2 years is how long those positions can remain in place. So this is a very, very important note that the Senate must allow recess appointments. That's the only way that President Trump is going to, in an expedited fashion, be able to fill all the vacancies in the federal government and ensure that his agenda is enacted as the American people elected him to do. So that is the latest on that Senate Majority Leader election. As I was mentioning in the first segment, the trifecta is complete. As of just earlier, multiple outlets have called the U.S. House of Representatives for the Republicans. So even with the House, the Senate, and the White House, folks, don't underestimate the resistance. And there's a couple ways that the Democrats can resist President Trump before January 20th. And I want to highlight these things because these battles are going to be taking place over the next few months. But listen to me. The budget, the budget, the budget. Congress has to pass a budget by December 20th, which is a ridiculous, I have to watch my language, it is a ridiculous thing that Congress has kicked the can down the road on this budget until December 20th. They should have passed a budget that goes through January 20th. And then you allow the new president, actually probably February 1st is better. But you allow the new president, the incoming president, to negotiate the new budget, right? That makes perfect sense, whether it's Kamala Harris or President Trump. But instead, they kick the can to December 20th. And then now, mark my word, the Democrats and the establishment are going to try to get a budget that delays President Trump's agenda. They're going to try to kick this can down mid-2025, late-2025, where President Trump has no negotiating power on budget until after his first year of his administration.
Yeah, not to mention they want to get to recess as quickly as possible for Christmas.
Exactly.
You know, the same holiday that they don't believe in.
Yeah, they want to head home and go on vacation, but to your point, Bobby, they won't technically take a recess.
Right.
Which is what Mitch McConnell did.
It would be just an absence.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell and the Senate, they would go on a non-technical recess and vacation all the time when President Trump was in office the first time. But guess what Mitch McConnell would do out of spite for President Trump? He would leave one senator in Washington, D.C. to gavel in every morning and gavel out after 5 minutes so that President Trump could make recess appointments. All right, that's why this is important. But okay, so the first way that they can stymie President Trump's agenda is through the budget. We don't need a budget that goes past February or March at the most, okay? Probably, I would say February. February is probably comfortable. Here's why. President Trump has to get sworn in on January 20th, and then they have to staff everything and begin negotiating on the budget. So they need at least a couple weeks on that in order to have some time to get things done right. So I would say no later than February, March on the budget as far as when to extend it until. Secondly, these judges and these executive branch nominations, the Senate Republicans are going to have to stay in session often in order for to push through judicial nominations and executive branch and cabinet nominations. I don't want to see any slow walking, okay, of these nominations in the Senate. Look, if the Senate's gonna be all, you know, up in arms about, hey, we can't go on recess, we can't allow recess appointments because we have to sign off on every cabinet position. Well, all right, number one, I don't agree with that. But if you're going to be that stubborn about it, then you better be in session like 24 hours a day. And I'm not exaggerating. All right. You guys can rotate sleeping 24 hours a day. I want to push through these nominations ASAP, like fast, fast, fast. The last thing I'll mention is this 2-year window of opportunity. Okay. It's not guaranteed. All right. Everybody thinks that, you know, this landslide victory and, you know, Republicans could control Congress and the White House for 10 years or 12 years or whatever the math is. Folks, don't underestimate the ability of the Democrats to bounce back, okay? They're in disarray. I completely agree they're in disarray, all right? But do not discount their ability to bounce back, okay? And come back with a vengeance, all right? And so, with that being said, these 2 years are our window of opportunity. We don't need to say, well, in the last 2 years of President Trump's term, we'll get some stuff done. No, we're getting it done now. Okay, we're getting it done now. Because if we get a Democrat Congress or a Democrat Senate in 2 years from now, they're going to impeach, they're going to slow walk, they're going to investigate, they're going to stonewall, they're not going to pass the budget. So folks, this 2-year window, full steam ahead, 24/7, 365, no holding back, no excuses. I don't want to hear any excuses. Fast, hard, fast, vigorous. Let's go.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue 5 babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.